Welcome to the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zach Elwood. In this episode, I interview Professor Karina Kurostalina about insults, specifically political and cultural insults, which can play a role in political conflict and wars. Kurostalina wrote a book called Political Insults, How Offenses Escalate Conflict, in which she created a category system for political insults, and we talk about some of the ideas in that book. Professor Kurostalina is a social psychologist whose work focuses on social identity and dynamics of identity and power in protracted social conflicts. She works at George Mason University. She's a director of the Program on Prevention of Mass Violence and the Program on History, Memory, and Conflict at the School for Conflict Analysis and Resolution. Okay, here's the interview. Hi, Dr. Kurostalina. Thanks for coming on.
Hello. Hi.
So let's start with, how big a role would you say insults and the feeling of being insulted play in political conflicts?
It's a very interesting question because I study identity-based conflicts for many, many years. And one of the major tools how to study conflicts is to explore what mechanisms are used by different parties to control power, increase legitimacy, to control social boundary between groups. And I found that insult was very often used not only by leader on leader, but mostly between groups. That's why I was very interested to explore how identity-based conflicts are shaped by such political insults.
In your book, Political Insults, you came up with categories for political insults like, for example, legitimacy insult, divergence insult, projection insult, to name a few of them. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the goal of your work was to come up with a methodology for being able to categorize these insult types. Is that accurate to say?
Yes, absolutely. Then somebody asked me, do you know there are any theories of insult, because this was coming up in political landscape of United States and other countries. I start looking in the literature and I found there are good news and bad news. Bad news, there are no theory of insult, and good news, there are no theory of insult.
So I have opportunity,
I can work on it. There are a lot of concepts very similar, like uncivility. There are other conceptual ideas like aggression, but they were not really capturing what I was trying to find, how insult constructed in identity-based conflict. So I did use specifically identity-based theories, for example, theory of social boundary or theory of need for positive self-esteem. This is a very foundational for social identity theory, that we need positive self-esteem. That's why we compare ourselves with other group and put them down. And other theories of power and identity to create these tools, six particular tools. And what is important for it, it's not just for analysis. What the major thesis of my theory is that if we know what insult people are using and we recognize it, then we actually know what are real needs of insulting party behind this insult. So it's really not only analyzing conflict, but it's also helped us analyze initial motivation and initial needs and address these needs if we really care about the party, or it will give us more knowledge about what this party lacks to be more powerful in our dealing with this party.
So understanding the processes, the pathways behind the feelings of the insults allows you to do more, to solve the problem better, like do better negotiations and mediations. Is that accurate?
Yes, but it's also deeper. It's not just feelings, it's actually needs. For example, if person is using the identity insult, it means this person needs recognition, needs to increase self-esteem. That's why it's using insult to put others. Or if person is using the, say, power insult, it means that person needs, or group needs power, experience unbalance of power and want to increase it or change this balance. So it means that they're using this insult to decrease power of the others. So every time when we see than people using particular insult, it means that they have some needs. It's not coming as just aggression or incivility, as it described in other theories.
How well do your insult categories carry over to non-political insults, like just insults in everyday life?
Oh my God, it's so interesting because I see it, and as soon as I develop the theory, again, you develop theory as a tool. You're not develop theory for the sake of this theory. And I see that everywhere. And actually, even my students who read the book, or my friends who read the book, they tell, oh, this is the type of insult. So it's really helping, like, and you see it in everyday life. It's really seeing how people do employ it. And actually, it's helping to deal. I think it's really empower you if you know that people use an insult because they do have needs. Mm-hmm. So it's actually helping you. Oh, okay, you're using this insult because you are not happy with yourself. So it's actually help you not to feel insulted.
Yeah, when I was reading your book, I thought of going through rap song and country song lyrics, because you can, there's a lot of this, like, you're not really true country, or you're not really true hip-hop lifestyle or whatever. You can find a lot of insults in both of those genres. I thought it'd be fun to go through and categorize insults in those genres.
Yeah, actually, song analysis of song is very important. I have a student now who just completed her thesis, wonderful thesis, about songs of Kurdish bands who write songs to address the Kurdish-Turkish conflict. And it's a lot of themes which really we found in the songs, which were specifically addressing the relationship between two groups.
Yeah, there's that Spanish rapper who was, he was basically arrested for insults to the king.
Yeah, it's the same as Pussy Riot. The one I wrote in this book was very interested how these girls, which, I don't know, there are some ideas that they were naked, they were not at all. They were just singing in a church. And why they were singing in a church? Because this church was really positioned as a church which legitimize and empower current Russian president. So they were just singing song where they were insulting the power, and they were trying to show that it's not legitimate. But the government actually used completely different insults and presented this insult to population, because they had to legitimize their treatment of these girls. So they show, look, they were singing in a song in a church. That's why they insult religion. And this church was also devoted to the veterans of the war. So they insult veterans. So it's how you position it, how you create. For me, the key word here is construction of insult.
Right. So it's the construction of insult, which makes me think of, you know, I see these Trump emails that I get, I'm on the list. And a big part of that is them trying to equate when the Democrats attack me, Trump, they're insulting all of you, which is a common kind of cult psychology thing, too, to say any criticism of the leader is an insult to all of us. And I'm wondering, have you studied that at all?
Yes, I actually discussed it in the types of insults. I discuss that some insults are transferred or learned, and how leaders as a prototypes, and we have such a word, prototype, in social psychology, and somebody who represents basic values, ideas, beliefs of the group. So how these leaders construct insult for the group and tell a group, you should feel like this way. And that's why I ideally discuss this very in details, how insult can be learned by the group, even people do not feel it. But speaking about Trump, it's very important because I wrote another book, which is Trump Effect, in which one of the chapters was specifically how he mastered insults as a tools of reducing power of other people, reducing their legitimacy, stressing boundary between him and other people. So he really mastered insult in not just in personal relations, but in group relations, political relations.
Yeah, I think that's still a underappreciated aspect of these dynamics, because I think there's so many Trump supporters And I've talked to people and heard this firsthand, that their reason for supporting Trump is because liberals, specific liberal friends of theirs or people online, have been mean to them. And, you know, it's this association, which, you know, as you say, Trump has excelled in associating any insults to an individual or any even insults to the group. He's harnessing that power, and that's a big part of his support. And I've heard people, there was a radio call in on a political show recently, I heard, where someone directly said, "I'm voting for Trump because some liberal people he knew on Facebook were mean to him," which, you know, this isn't really logical. Like, the Democrat leaders are not, you know, making those insults. I think these are underappreciated dynamics.
I think we really have to acknowledge that in every single group dynamic, there are some extreme ends of it, of each group. And we really have to acknowledge that, yes, insult produced by both groups. We could not be conflict analysis specialists. We could not be scholars in conflict analysis. We will not really see dynamics from both sides. But it's unbalanced, of course. And as you write, there is also a lot of dynamics when leadership teach people how to recognize insults and make them, I called it sensitizing to insult in my book. So then sensitize particular groups to recognize insults.
So it seems like modern communication technologies, whether it's a large number of cable TV channels or the internet, it seems like these technologies lend themselves to the capability of more and more people to be able to find insults and be insulted. And that could be, you know, for example, a rural person watching a TV show where rural people are the butt of a joke, or a fundamentalist Muslim person learning about depictions of Muhammad, you know, happening thousands of miles away. So it seems like the greater transparency of our world means that there's always something somewhere for a group to be insulted about. Would you agree with that? And do you see that perhaps as playing a role in increased political polarization?
Oh, I absolutely agree. Unfortunately, this great invention, new technologies of internet, of mass media, of new media platforms and public platforms, they actually, instead of just bettering the society, what the idea was, and they did, right? At the same time, they created a lot of negative intergroup dynamics. I completely agree that they contribute to identity-based conflicts, and there are a lot of research, for example, that anonymity of being behind particular name really give people more opportunities to be aggressive without feeling responsibility. It's increased aggressiveness, and we also see this crowd effect on the mass media, where people insult one person supported by another person. It creates this snowballing where groups of people become extremely aggressive and insult reproduced and increased through this dynamics on media, unfortunately.
Mm. So it seems like social media especially adds a whole new level of things because, you know, with cable TV, obviously the more and more channels there were, the more possibility for insult there was. But now you have social media where you can directly insult people and be directly insulted. And I'm wondering, do you see that as an even more ramping up of this kind of dynamic?
Unfortunately, yes, absolutely agree. And one way to insult person face to face, you have to have courage, or at least you have to have more power, right? Mm-hmm. But if you do it in internet, it's this remove access, and also again anonymity create reducing social control over how people can insult, and it's become actually honorable to insult other side in media because you will get cheered by your peers.
Some people perceive leaders like Trump, who use bombastic, insulting language, some people perceive that as a strong leader, and I think that can be the role behind some support of, you know, these kind of strong men, authoritarian leaders. But considering your work and other similar work, there's obviously some major risks involved with when it comes to leaders who insult other groups and people. with your work, when you see such speech like that from leaders, do you feel like you see the danger much more inherent in that kind of speech compared to, you know, someone who hasn't studied these kind of topics?
Oh, this is a very important question and very, very good question, because the first what we really have to understand is what is power. And for years, we were believing that power is equal to coercion and control over ability of other person to pursue his or her goal. And this conception of power and being strong and bombardic, as you told, was really prevailing in social sciences, but also in human minds. But recently, more and more research, especially in social identity research, shows that coercion is not a power, it's coercion. Power comes with ability to persuade people, ability to inspire people, ability to make people do what you do without coercing them, because without pushing them. So then I see such bombardic behavior as Trump, very aggressive behavior, and what he's using instrumental aggression, right, in comparison with, say, for example, frustration as aggression. And this instrumental aggression and insults, power insult, legitimacy insult, they come in exactly because he doesn't feel power. Actually, then people behave like this. For me, it's a clear symptom showing that these people feel that they do not have enough power how they wish it to have. So this is very important to realize that power really comes in with the ability to convince people based on your own example, and he has it too. We really have to see that he does empower a lot of people by other examples. But I would not say that aggressive behavior shows the power. It is opposite.
Right. It's like an immature version perception of what power is. It's like just storming around and insulting people, and, you know, whereas it takes a lot more discipline and
yeah, like power comes and somebody tells, let's do it together, and people, yes, let's do it together, this is power, right? But if you tell, we're doing it over, or you will be punished, then it's not power.
What comes to mind for me is Trump sending childish insults to North Korea, and, you know, people and Trump supporters think that's some sort of show of power. But to me, and probably many people, it's just a scary thing, because, you know, with your work in mind, you see how insults can play a big role in riling up tensions and leading to unnecessary conflicts. And
yeah, North Korea, it's another, I wrote the chapter on North Korea in the book. It's a very, I think what Trump was doing there is really mimicking their behavior.
Oh, mimicking, yeah.
Because what North Korea is, actually North Korean leader is doing exactly, he's employing insult all the time and aggression, instrumental aggression, because this is how he wants to show to his people this is power is. This very coercive power. And I actually found in my other research in Ukraine and Russia that power, perception of power, meaning of power there, is really coercion. The public opinion or public understanding how power function really very, very simplistic. So people who have more control over others consider it those who have power. But in reality, people have power only if other people give them power, right? So you could not have power if other people do not accept it.
From an amateur perspective, the one thing that seemed not as scary about Trump's behavior was the fact that it didn't seem like anyone actually took him seriously, because, you know, for example, with North Korea leaders seem to know that they're kind of playing a role. Like, as you say, they're using insults and being aggressive. And it seemed like they knew that Trump is doing similar things. So there was that going for us. But you can easily imagine how, if you're dealing with people who actually will take have emotional responses to your insults, it becomes a lot more dangerous.
Yeah.
It seems to me that our psychological need for conflict and feelings of group insult seem to make long-term human existence unlikely, especially when you consider, you know, future, near future destructive technologies we might have. And I'm wondering how pessimistic or optimistic you might be about, you know, humanity's long-term existence.
I actually very optimistic because when we see violence, we see more violence now because A, we live in, right now, right? And B, because media really show all these instances of violence all the time, because this is how they sell newspapers or something else. But in reality, if you analyze, violence strongly decreased. If we look into Middle Ages, or we look even 18th, 19th century or 20th century, is the longest time we live without like a big war. There are still some small wars, and I'm myself from Ukraine originally. It's still so painful for me to see it there. But it's the amount of violence toward women, toward sexual minorities, toward people with mental disabilities, toward prisoners. We still have a lot of violence, but it's incomparable with violence which were before in society. So I think we get more humanity, more compassion. I see very positive tendencies. So again, I'm very worried about social media impact on dynamics and how it can provoke violence, but I think we're in a good place.
I'm pretty concerned about the internet effects too. I think it's underappreciated how much impact that has. But yeah, to your point, I think it's also underappreciated how much the ubiquity of video recordings in society, modern society, has helped improve things too, because it's so easy to get caught doing something that is perceived as shameful. That I feel like I don't see that talked about much, but that I think that's really helped us in the last few decades too.
Yes, because if you look in violence, again, connecting it to your previous question, if you look which violence produced more deaths or which identity was most violent, and if you compare, for example, ethnic conflict, religious conflict, and ideological conflict, and ask yourself which particular identity was most violent, you will be surprised to know that it was ideological identity. It's not ethnic conflicts, it's not religious conflicts, it's ideological conflicts which kill most of the people. It's Stalinist repressions, it's Cambodia Khmer Rouge, it's Nazi ideology, because it was, yes, it was against ethnic group, but it also was, Holocaust also was connected with people with disabilities, communists, sexual minorities. So it was ideological structure. So if you look at it, ideology is the most dangerous social identity. And this is what we see social media really help to promote.
What do you think that is, that ideological identity would be the biggest source of violence?
It's always war, again, as I told, but also, for example, I do a lot of research on history and historical narratives and collective memory. And what's happening, for example, I'm writing now a book which shows how a collective memory functions as ideological construct. Because what is ideology? Ideology is not always political. If we look into the very origin of ideology, it's something which creates meaning of the world for us, giving us clear perception of the future, giving us clear connection between past, present, and the future. And it's also giving us this values, and values as evaluative and normative prescriptions for what should be done. So, if you look on ideology from this point of view, is it's like original meaning of ideology, then you see this is exactly all this internet communities function as ideological groups.
Yeah, it seems like ideological stances are things that you can convince yourself more certainly of, as opposed to religious or ethnic. There's more of a chance of you reaching some specific logical, in your mind, logical conclusion, and that seems more motivating than the other.
Yeah, because if you look into extreme meaning of ideology, it's a myth, right? What is myth? Myth is a concept about the world, And ancient Greeks were living in myths and they believe gods is like there, right? And the same way we have now, every group has their ideological ideas about how world should be organized, what is important, what is not important. And in this case, we see, first of all, these communities and internet functioning like this community, having their own myths and their own perceptions. There are a lot of what's called fake news, which create the alternative reality. But we also see insults as a key there, because for these groups, it's very important to insult other groups as not having right values, not having education. And we see this insult from both sides. And we know that, for example, Hillary Clinton lost last time because she was using a lot of insults, like basket of deplorables. It should not come from the leader.
Yeah, that was a bad decision. Even though she, in her defense, she did say half, and then she also said it at a time when
just one, when even one.
I know she definitely should have said it, but she also didn't I think everybody underestimated how many Trump supporters there were, so she made a tactical mistake in thinking mm-hmm. that there was not going to be much price to pay for that. But yeah,
yeah, this is important. If you really bring important values, you should follow values, right? You should not be like another side.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I see. Yeah, that's what bothers me about I see so many liberal people, anti-Trump people using the same kind of insulting language that Trump uses. And I'm just thinking, you know, that is not the answer. That is not how we heal things, you know.
Absolutely. This is very important. If you want to change the world, you should not mirror the tactics of Trump, right? Or you should not mirror the tactics of North Korea. And for example, in the situation of Ukraine and Russia, again, I also wrote about it in the book, it's the same as Ukraine, instead of become a liberal space and liberal state, really mimic Russian totalitarian and position, developing very 19th century ethnic concept of national identity. So then you see this and insulting each other, continuous insulting each other in the same way.
Did you happen to read Francis Fukuyama's book, Identity?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm.
That was great. That was, for anyone listening, that was a great examination of what seems to be our fracturing into these, you know, different identity-based groups. And he also talks at the end about how social media, internet and social media play a role in that. Reminded me of what you were talking about.
Yeah, there are a lot of very thoughtful people really analyzing how identity play a very important role. And if we speak about even resource-based conflict and real politics, at the end, it's social identity dynamics which made this conflict really protracted. So identity is not the source of conflict, it's not a result of conflict, but it's something which changed conflict in such a strong way that it's become protracted and very hard to resolve.
So I was reading about a study, a 1967 study by Robert Abelson, and it showed that the subjects who were insulted during a discussion, their positions were made more stubborn and more extreme. Do you happen to know about that study? And do you see that tying in with how internet and social media might be making people more extreme and more hardened in their positions?
No, I don't know this particular study, but I clearly see, but I read multiple other studies. For example, there are pretty interesting body of literature about Southern pride and how its impact. I was really interested to find this body of literature when I was doing research on insult and how insult play a role in Southern culture and Latin American culture, for example. It's very important part. But yes, what actually people are trying to achieve by insulting other party is changing their behavior, right? You're not just insult people to make them feel bad. You use insult to change their behavior. So if you make other party more stubborn or you make other party less efficient, this is so your insult achieves the goal. That's why it's very important to analyze how people are using this insult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like so much of any nation's history, how the twists and turns of a nation's history are under the under the hood due to these insults of various groups.
Yeah, and you know from history there are multiple examples, and people specifically used insult to make people behave aggressively and to lose the control and take advantage of it. So insult was, in many cases, was used. There are many historical examples, but you also can have this example from the life. Then you insult a person specifically to make this person weaker and act aggressively and not thinking.
So this has been Dr. Karina Korostelina. Yeah, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a great talk.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the People Who Read People podcast with me, Zach Elwood. If you'd like to read more about the impact of social media on political division, I recently wrote a piece entitled "The Psychology Behind How Social Media Increases Polarization," and I'm pretty proud of it. It cites various psychological studies and effects and examines how the internet and social media amplify some negative social tendencies we have. You should be able to find that by searching for Zachary Elwood, Social Media Polarization. If you'd like to learn more about this podcast, go to my website at readingpokertells.video. If you like this podcast, please consider leaving it a rating on iTunes. That's the best way you can send your appreciation. Thanks for listening. Music by Small Skies.